Well, welcome to our latest publicsectorinc.org podcast. My name is Michael Allegretti, director of the Center for State and Local Leadership here at the Manhattan Institute. And I'm truly honored today to be joined by Rhode Island General Treasurer Gina Raimondo, who to many of our listeners should be, she should be well known. And most importantly, she is this year's 2011 Urban Innovator Award recipient. Before we speak with the treasurer, just a little bit about the award. As part of the Institute's effort to promote effective approaches to improving the lives of Americans in cities across the country, this nonpartisan prize was inaugurated in 2000 by the Institute's Center for Civic Innovation, the predecessor to the current Center for State and Local Leadership. It's given annually to a policymaker whose work epitomizes the Institute's view that effective government is key to the safety and prosperity of our cities, the historic engines of the U.S. economy, and the vehicles for upward mobility for all Americans. Now, past recipients of this award have included Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, Miami Mayor Manny Diaz, D.C. Schools Chancellor Michelle Rhee, Chicago Mayor Richard Daley, and Florida Governor Jeb Bush. So Treasurer Raimondo is clearly in great company as this year's recipient. Before we speak with the treasurer, a bit about her. She, prior to being elected general treasurer on November 2nd of 2010, Ms. Raimondo worked for a decade as co-founder and general partner of Point Judith Capital, Rhode Island's only venture capital firm. So she comes with a great deal of private sector experience. She served as an SVP of fund development at Village Ventures, where she managed a team that established 12 venture capital funds nationwide. She's generous with her time, serving as vice chair of the board of directors of Crossroads Rhode Island, which is the state's largest homeless services organization. And in that role, she helped to set up a shelter for women. She's a trustee at Women and Infants Hospital and a chair of its quality committee. She's also on the boards of LaSalle Academy and Family Service of Rhode Island. A graduate of LaSalle, as well as Harvard University and Yale Law School, and on top of it all, a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford University. Treasurer Raimondo, we are delighted to have you with us today, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I'd like to speak to you a bit, obviously, about what's on everyone's mind, which is your great work in Rhode Island to reform the state's pension system. In broad strokes, can you tell our listeners, what did you do to reform the pension system?
Yes, thank you, Michael, and thank you to the Manhattan Institute for this award. In November of last year, the Rhode Island General Assembly passed the Rhode Island Retirement Security Act with overwhelming majorities in the House and Senate, and it was passed in response to a great call by the public for action to the pension problem. And in broad strokes, the reform did the following. Number one, it immediately reduced our unfunded liability by nearly 50%, by over $3 billion. It improved the funding status from 48% to over 60% and put us on a healthy path toward 80% funding. It saved the taxpayers of Rhode Island over $4 billion in the next two decades. And just as important, it ensures that the tax bill for the pension in the future will be steady and predictable and will never again spike to unaffordable levels. And perhaps most important, it provides retirement security to all of our public employees. We no longer have a system that is projected to run out of money or dwindle to extremely low funding levels, and we can look in the eye of all of our public employees and tell them that they have a secure retirement.
Well, that's all very encouraging to hear, and you said some phrases there such as steady and predictable and retirement security. Key words that are so often lacking from the pension reform debate in this country. But I have to ask you, what was the greatest challenge in this process for you, And on the flip side, what was surprisingly easy to achieve? Because your example is one that many are looking to for lessons.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, you know, pensions are a complicated topic and a very complicated topic to talk about. And our primary focus was constantly on process and communication. I would say, you know, as far as the greatest challenge, probably two challenges or twofold. The first is, in fact, designing a solution that would work. Every pension system is different. Rhode Island's pension system was particularly challenging to fix because it was so poorly funded. As I say, 48% funded. We had, a $7 billion unfunded liability, which means that any reform that we instituted necessarily had to impact retirees and active workers, because if you didn't go after those two groups, you wouldn't touch the unfunded liability. Also, in our system, the Rhode Island General Assembly in the past 10 years has already enacted several rounds of pension reform. So some of the easy fixes, like increasing the retirement age or modifying the COLA, had been done. So it was very challenging to find a solution to our pension system, and one that would be permanent. You know, one that would be, mm-hmm. as you just said, steady and predictable. Mm-hmm. The entire time we kept our focus on a solution which would work for the next 30 years, not for next year.
Right.
I would say, secondarily, a great challenge was kind of educating the public and educating the General Assembly around the link between our pension system and the general health and economic prosperity of our state. So when we began the discussion around pensions, many people said, I don't have a pension. I'm not a public employee. Why do I care? And it was our challenge to say approximately 10% of our state revenue was going into the pension system, on its way to 20%. And regardless of whether you receive a public pension, you need to care about fixing the pension problem, because if we don't fix it, either we're going to see multi-billion-dollar tax increases or billions of dollars of cuts for public schools, public buses, infrastructure, and the very future of our state was on the line here. And one of our challenges was convincing the electorate that, you know, pension reform was extremely relevant for everybody, regardless of whether you received a pension.
So let me ask you something that has stood out to me and to many of my colleagues has been your efforts around public engagement and public education and doing that up front. As a politician, I'm sure that's not the easiest thing to do, but it seems to have been very rewarding and helped to move this reform process through not just the government mechanisms, but through the public sphere. That being said, if you were to do this all over again, what might you have done differently? Something maybe with public education, or maybe the amount of unfunded liability that you drew down. What might you have changed?
You know, the one thing that I would change, were I to do it all over again, was to place a greater emphasis on the intergenerational issues. What do I mean by that? You know, the pension system in Rhode Island prior to our reform was actually deeply unfair to younger workers, because prior to the reform, your average school teacher, for example, was paying nearly 10% of her pay into the pension, and two-thirds of that was going to retiree benefits, to the benefits of those already retired. And furthermore, our estimates showed that the system would have been out of money, depending on your assumptions, anywhere between 25 and 40 years from now. And I think were I to do it all over again, I would have placed greater emphasis and tried to do a better job of reaching out to younger state employees and younger teachers and engaging them and educating them around just how deeply unfair the system was, and therefore how it was very definitely in their best interest to have pension reform. This was not about, particularly if you're a younger employee, this wasn't about taking your pension away. Quite the contrary, it was about ensuring that there would be a pension there for you, particularly since you're paying in, you know, as I said, almost 10% of your pay every week to your pension.
Now,
I think that, you know, we did do that. We did some of that. We tried to do that. But I would have put a greater emphasis on the future, frankly, mm-hmm. you know, the younger workforce, and really try to have them kind of intellectually and emotionally realize just how important pension reform was for them.
Now, I want to suss this out a bit, because so often on publicsectorinc.org, we speak about the fact that reform doesn't move forward because of politics or entrenched interests, specifically as it relates to pension reform. Education reform would be another example. But on the flip side, we also talk as a society about the disengaged youth and the fact that younger people don't vote. We know that historically in elections, they're decided by senior citizens who vote overwhelmingly in larger numbers than younger voters. So how would you, what do you say to folks who make this argument? You know, it's politics, they're entrenched interests, we're not going to be able to overcome it. Or more specifically, how do you engage the youth in the pension reform debate, which seems out of touch for so many of them?
It's a great question, and, you know, I agree with you that, you know, kind of government is going to work, which I believe it did. You know, the night that the Rhode Island General Assembly passed the Retirement Security Act, government worked. You know, the people of Rhode Island called for action, and the legislators delivered it. And if we're going to solve some of our great problems, such as pension reform, people have to be engaged. Over the last year, I and my staff and my office engaged in a unrelenting public relations campaign,
mm-hmm.
you know, constant daily outreach, whether it was myself in person or press communications. Every day, we were out talking to anyone who would listen about the pension. And I think the breakthrough was in demonstrating to the average Rhode Islander that it was in their interest to solve this pension problem.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, by keeping the focus on the numbers and on the magnitude of the problem and on the consequences of inaction,
mm-hmm.
it became very hard for people to be against pension reform.
Almost by stripping the politics out of it and just
exactly.
showing it as a math equation, in
That's
essence.
That's exactly right. By kind of forcing people mm-hmm. to confront the brutal reality of the math, we then demonstrated to folks that it was very, very much in their best interest to get engaged.
Sure.
And we literally would, you know, go around to say, you know, small business groups or social service groups. We spent a lot of time with nonprofits and social service groups doing the math for them about the potential cuts in their funding if we didn't fix the pension, and thus, you know, that urged them to get engaged.
So you were able to build constituencies for change, which is obviously very important. Let me ask you, as we move towards wrapping up, part of our mission here at the Manhattan Institute and part of why we were so excited to give you this award is in hope that your example motivates others. And in my home state of New York, in the middle of the country in Illinois, and over on the west in California, three examples of states that are truly fronting confounding pension problems. What lessons do you have for reformers or for folks who are simply in government right now in those states? You've touched on a lot of these things, but any succinct points you could leave for them?
Mm-hmm. You know, every system has its own set of challenges, but I do think our process could translate to others and be helpful. A few lessons, you know, the first would be really stay focused on accurate numbers,
mm-hmm.
you know, force accuracy, transparency, and truth in numbers, and focus on the numbers. Avoid the politics, avoid the finger-pointing, avoid the casting of blame. I'd say the second thing that we did is we began by defining retirement security. So we stayed away from a discussion of cutting benefits or taking away pensions, and rather began by saying, what does it mean to have a secure retirement, develop consensus around that, and then work backwards to design a system that would provide that. I'd say the final thing, if I could offer any guidance or thought would be focus on the long term. So too often in Rhode Island and probably in other states, when policymakers focus on a pension fix, they say, what changes do we have to make to the pension this year in order to balance next year's budget? And I would suggest that that's not the right way to fix a pension. Rather, you should say, you know, what is the permanent solution here, and what changes do we have to make in order to kind of permanently fix our pension problems and our budget problems, you know, for the next 20 or 30 years?
I personally agree with everything you said, in particular the third thing, which definitely needs underscoring in our state capitals across the country. Final question before we let you go. What's next for Rhode Island? We hear talk now of moving to reform perhaps the even bigger problem, the city pension systems. What's the next big move in Rhode Island to help put the state on a firm financial footing?
Mm-hmm. Well, my first priority in this new year is to effectively and efficiently implement the new legislation, which takes effect July of this year. And as part of that, we'll be implementing a defined contribution program for, you know, tens of thousands of employees. But I do think, you know, one thing that Rhode Island showed in passing this pension reform is that we, as a state and as policymakers, are committed to fixing the fundamentals so that we can have a vibrant Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And there's no quick fix. Let's fix our fundamentals to get Rhode Island back on a path towards growth. I will also be assisting municipalities, as you just said, as they tackle their pension problems. It is not a bigger problem. The state unfunded liability was about $7 billion, and collectively the cities are just under $2 billion. The good news is that these cities now have a path to follow.
Mm-hmm.
They can take the process we took and actually the reforms we took and use those as a model as they get to work to reform their own individual pension systems. And certainly I and my office are going to be on hand to help them in the coming year as they go through that process.
Well, that's wonderful. So they have both a policy model and a political model that they can follow, as I'm sure many mayors in cities in Rhode Island are Democrats, as you are, and you've proven that this is should not and cannot be a partisan issue, but instead must be one about good governance. Treasurer Raimondo, I want to thank you for your time today. We look forward to seeing you here in New York this week. And to our listeners, be sure to log on to www.publicsectorinc.org. this Thursday, January 5th at 12 p.m., where we'll have a live stream of the award ceremony for the 2011 Urban Innovator Award. Thank you so much for your time, Treasurer. Have a good day.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.